Chapter 4, Innovation System. In Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, author Robert Persig wrote, "If a factory is torn down, but the rationality which produced it is left standing, then that rationality will simply produce another factory. If a revolution destroys a government, but the systematic patterns of thought that produce that government are left intact, then those patterns will repeat themselves. There's so much talk about the system and so little understanding." When it comes to innovation, 94% is the system, 6% is the worker. It is very frustrating to be the leader of a department, division, or company and not be optimistic or confident in the organization's ability to innovate. Or said another way, to not feel confident that your strategic plan to improve the organization's future can be executed. When leaders don't believe that the people in their organization can innovate, they usually blame their people, not their innovation systems, training, or tools. As a senior executive told me just 6 days ago in a meeting, "I just don't think we have the people we need to be able to innovate. My people aren't creative." I responded with simple questions. Do you know how to innovate? Were you ever taught how to innovate? Did you ever teach them how to innovate? Have you given them the training and tools to innovate? Do you have a documented innovation system? What to do, why to do, how to do it? Do they have a way to test and experiment with their ideas quickly and at low cost? Can they collaborate inside and outside the company with no stress or fear? Do they have the time and resources to innovate? The simple fact is that most innovation challenges are the result of a poor system, not poor workers. It is rare that workers consciously create failure. The desire to make a difference is core to the human spirit. Everyone has a personal desire to make a difference, to work smarter, and to improve their future. The problem is they don't know how. They were never taught or provided the systems and tools to innovate. When they are told to innovate, they are presented with what they perceive is a very risky situation. Without a reliable system or support, they see innovation as gambling with their career and reputation. Conversely, when they are provided with the education, systems, and tools needed to innovate, a new spirit takes root. Powerlessness is replaced with confidence. Fear of the future is replaced with a belief that no matter what the challenge is, we can solve it. The power of a great system. When the culture believes in its system for innovation, a chain reaction of positives occurs. Bold ideas are encouraged and enabled. Problems are seen as opportunities for reinvention instead of frustration. Rapid cycles of experimentation are the norm. Collaboration is embraced. When leadership has confidence in the ability of the innovation system, they pursue bolder strategies. When they are not confident, then they set strategies that are practical, which means they are weak and suboptimal. The old worldview of innovation systems was about control. The new worldview is about enabling everyone, everywhere, to innovate successfully. The father of the Toyota manufacturing system said it this way: "Brilliant process management is our strategy. We get brilliant results from average people managing brilliant processes. We observe that our competitors often get average or worse results from brilliant people managing broken processes." Did you design your innovation system, or did it design itself? Gordon McGilton, one of the top teachers of the Deming philosophy, taught me to ask leaders if their organization designed their innovation system or if it designed itself. He explained that in most cases, when someone finds a way to get something done, it becomes the way. However, there is no system for vetting if the way is the right way for the organization as a whole, or just for that work team or department. Gordon explained that in areas where the system doesn't work, we become efficient at explaining and compensating for the failures. For example, when our sales forecasting system is flawed, finance adjusts all forecasts downward. When innovations are not meaningfully unique, sales departments use price discounts to hit introductory sales targets. When management doesn't believe in their innovation system, they institute excessive testing, analysis, and approvals to reduce their fear. Bureaucracy, the easiest way to kill innovation. Innovation equals change. Change means uncertainty. Uncertainty means fear. The best way to prevent innovation or change is through the implementation of bureaucratic systems. Bureaucratic systems, such as excessive rules, regulations, or reporting, create barriers to change, and these barriers protect the status quo. Bureaucracy multiplies when organizations grow to a size where loyalty to department is greater than loyalty to the organization. Tom Peters once said something along the lines of, after you get to a dozen people, you have a hopeless bureaucracy. Recall, systems are defined as two or more independent parts working toward a common aim. In business and nonprofit organizations, this means divisions, departments, and/or teams focused on achieving the overall aim of the organization. So if a good system is two or more independent parts working toward a common aim, then a bad system is two or more independent parts working towards separate aims. Bad systems are created for one of three reasons. One, protectionism. One department seeks to optimize their results or metrics without thinking through what the impact is on interconnected departments. With innovation, this is often sparked by departments seeking to push work onto other departments. They do this because cost-cutting has reduced their staff such that they can't handle their existing workload. Two, overreaction. A random special cause mistake has happened, and we overdo our rules and regulations. With innovation, this is often the result of a new product, service, or system failure. When a failure occurs, instead of focusing on fixing the root cause, excessive rules, regulations, and inspection is implemented. Three, subversion. Someone wants to prevent change from happening. They use a passive-aggressive approach of installing rules, regulations, and inspection to slow down or kill the change. Ego, jealousy, and/or fear are often the root motivation. With innovation, this can be caused by, quote, not invented here syndrome, or the feeling that I got 3 years to retirement and don't want to mess up. Sadly, once created, bureaucratic systems self-multiply. One act of protectionism, overreaction, or subversion creates equal and opposite acts of protectionism, overreaction, or subversion from other departments. Fortunately, there is an antidote. Bureaucracy busting, a four-step antidote for ending your suffering. I believe that the most powerful thing that Dr. Deming created was the four steps for improving any system. He called them the system of profound knowledge. Dr. Deming's four principles are simple to understand. However, it takes decades to fully appreciate their consequences. A full explanation of the system of profound knowledge would fill a book as long or longer than this one. On campus, it's taught as a semester-long course entitled System-Driven Leadership. The four principles are independently valuable. Together, they form a simple four-step process for diagnosing and improving any system. Step one, appreciation for a system. Make the system visible. Step two, knowledge about variation. Separate special from common cause errors. Step three, psychology. Identify positive versus negative psychological forces on the system. And step four, theory of knowledge. Plan, do, study, act cycles of learning. Step one, appreciation for a system. This starts with recognizing that there is a system of interconnected and independent parts. The diagnosis process starts with making the system visible on paper. When you define the system clearly, then everyone can see how their efforts fit into the bigger framework. They can also see the interactions in the system. The process of making the system visible begins with defining A, the aim of the system, what its purpose for existence is. B, system boundaries, where the system begins and ends. C, system stakeholders, who are most impacted by the system. D, the one system metric, the primary output the system is designed to deliver. E, enabling metrics, variables that help predict the one system metric. Broader superstructure systems like innovation have enabling subsystems that help the system achieve its aim. The five most important subsystems for innovation include education, alignment, collaboration, rapid research, and patent ROI. Each of these is defined in greater detail in future chapters. The last step in making the system visible is the creation of a simple flowchart. The chart can be linear or nonlinear. They can be simple or very complex. With human systems, like innovation systems, we find it best to start with a simple 4 to 7 step flowchart that defines the bigger picture system phases. Step 2, knowledge about variation. With our system made visible in step 1, we now identify areas of high variance caused by the system itself, or common cause errors as they're known. Everything has variation. People have variation, projects have variation, every measurement has variation. When we understand and appreciate variance, we make smarter and more meaningful decisions. Instead of beating the workers to work harder, we enable the employees through systemic improvements. We use training, tools, and systems to amplify employee impact and reduce variation. Much of the frustration in life is when we don't understand when the variance is common cause, that is part of the system, or special cause, an error by the employee. Sadly, when it comes to strategy, innovation, and how we work together, the systems are so far out of control, it's hard to even get started with identifying special or common cause. The good news is that even in these situations, even a small application of systems thinking can generate tremendous improvement. One of the early innovation engineering companies had a totally random approach to selecting what innovation projects to work on. By instituting a disciplined system at the front end of innovation projects, they improved their speed to market with innovations by 40% in just 12 months. Most innovation systems have extreme variance. A primary reason for the variance is the lack of clarity on how the organization innovates. There is no agreement on what an innovation is. There's no education or systems for creating, communicating, or commercializing ideas. A simple test of clarity for a human system, like innovation is, can it be defined in writing? When the system is so clearly defined that you can write an operations manual or a series of checklist steps and tasks, you have a defined system. Innovation projects within an organization have variance in their level of risk and reward. Leap innovations have higher risk than core innovations. Innovation projects focused on the company's largest profit center are different than minor requests from customers. Sadly, most organizations don't recognize these differences. They apply the same system to every innovation project, causing needless bureaucracy and frustration. The solution, as detailed later, is to have separate innovation systems for each of your common types of projects. Variation can be common cause, errors of the system, or special cause, random events usually due to humans. The following excerpt from a speech my dad wrote on Dr. Deming's work outlined the differences between common cause and special cause problems. Quote, "One of the most important methods for identifying who and what is responsible for your problem is what Dr. Deming calls special causes and common causes. Special causes are problems that can be controlled by the workers and supervisors. And these, according to Dr. Deming, from historical samples, are 6% of the problems we are involved with. Common causes are problems that only management can solve. These are faults of the system, which make up 94% of all of our problems. Now, in a lot of companies, this will be quite a revelation, because most managers sit around saying, hey, if the workers would only do a better job, we would be much better off. In fact, some of the management people in the automobile industry say, yes, but Japanese workers are much more dedicated than American workers. And American workers may have too many pleasures, too many things to be able to do a good job. Dr. Deming says this is wrong. 94% of our problems are faults of the system, which only management can solve. Examples of special cause or worker-solvable problems are absence from the job, using wrong materials, negligent handling of goods. Examples of common cause or only management-solvable problems are poor product design, poor machine maintenance, poor training and tools to do the job. Dr. Deming was very clear that it was the job of leadership to understand the difference between the two types of errors. I believe that much of the friction between leadership and employees is a result of a lack of understanding of the differences between the two. With human systems, the variances are often so large and obvious that they can be identified easily through simply visualizing data in a simple graphic. As systems become more defined, quantitative control charts can help us define opportunities for improvement with statistical precision. These charts classically calculate what is known as upper control limit and lower control limit boundaries. When system data is between these limits, they are known as common cause errors that are caused by the system variance. Errors outside these ranges are special cause errors. Our goal with system innovations is to improve the average output from the system while also reducing variation in results. Step 3, psychology. Having made the system visible and identified areas of high common cause variance, we next identify areas of negative psychology. Positive psychology dimensions are motivating to those involved in the system. Negative psychology dimensions are demotivating. Human systems have elements that create positive and negative motivation to those who interact with and within the system. The most powerful psychological tool for enabling innovation is to leverage intrinsic as opposed to extrinsic motivation. Intrinsic motivators include a sense of purpose, pride in work, and personal engagement. They are the most powerful drivers of positive psychology. Extrinsic motivators include intimidating people into innovating or bribing them to think creatively. If they work, they only work for a short time. Evidence of this is the classic suggestion box with a prize for the best idea. The contest works once or twice, but participation dies off as the purpose is the prize, not pride of work, and only one or two ever win. Over 100 years of academic research finds that intrinsic motivation is far more powerful. Intrinsic motivation means that those who innovate do so because of an internal belief that the new idea or method is meaningful to them. Intrinsic motivation is a key reason why entrepreneurs are up to 10 times more successful with innovation than large companies. That is 50% success versus 5%. Step 4, theory of knowledge. Having made the system visible and identified areas of variation and of negative psychology, we now seek to improve the system. We take an action to reduce variance or remove negative psychology. The action is done using a disciplined approach known as the Deming cycle. It's a version of the scientific method that is also known as a cycle of learning, Plan, Do, Study, Act, or PDSA. Or in the irreverent way of innovation engineering black belts, it's called fail fast, fail cheap cycles of learning. The PDSA approach provides a disciplined structure for improving the system. When we come to resolution with the first learning cycle, we then begin another PDSA cycle to improve the system. A story of the power of intrinsic motivation. The most remarkable innovation successes that I observed over my career have been driven by intrinsic motivation. Some time ago, I was working on a new product for a major beverage company. We were at a market research location where hundreds of consumers tasted our final options for putting into test market. Two of the products did well, the third failed. The answer seemed obvious. It was time to kill the failed product. Then the product developer spoke up and said, "I really believe in the product that failed, and I think I know how to fix it. Could I have the weekend to work on it before we make a final decision?" On Monday morning, we gathered on a conference call. The product developer reported that she felt that the product was fixed and that she could have it perfected by the end of the week when we had to go into small-scale production for the test market. At this point, we had three options. One, delay production and run another consumer test. Two, drop the product. Or three, trust the product development person and go for it. Given that it was a small-scale test market and the risk was low, I recommended that we trust the product developer and go for it. Her response was magic. "I won't let you down. It will be great." Her internal motivation to do something great had an impact. In market, her new product had twice the repeat purchase rate of the other two products. Trusting in intrinsic motivation and trusting in her result in a product going from worst to best. When employees have a sense of intrinsic meaning and purpose, they commit themselves in a boundless way that is awe-inspiring. When their motivation is bought through extrinsic rewards, it is a transactional motivation that has clear and constraining boundaries. And with each transaction, the level of reward needed to motivate goes up. Dr. Deming, writing in The New Economics, said, "Some extrinsic motivation helps to build self-esteem, but total submission to extrinsic motivation leads to destruction of the individual. On the job, under the present system, joy in work and innovation become secondary to a good rating. Extrinsic motivation, in the extreme, crushes intrinsic motivation. A story of the importance of knowledge about variation. Great leaders think and dig for root causes when defects, mistakes, or problems occur. They know that if they can discover the root cause, they will solve instead of patch the problem. Poor leaders often embark on a search for the guilty instead of taking responsibility for mistakes that are a result of the system. In most cases, the failures repeat themselves. When a negative event occurs, the question leaders should explore is the mistake a result of a special cause or a common cause error? A story of the power of identifying special cause and common cause errors comes from my dad's work at National Corporation. He was working on carbonless paper production. Carbonless paper is writing paper or forms that have one coating on the top and another on the bottom of the sheets. When you put them together and mark on the top sheet, the mark shows on the sheet below. National Corporation was having problems with the quality of carbonless paper from its Merrimack, New Hampshire plant in the USA. The process involves carefully coating the paper stock with a special CF and CB coatings, as they're called. Before Dr. Deming, it was thought that workers were to blame for the poor quality. In fact, data showed that some shifts, the workers created great quality, some shifts poor quality. Even worse, it seemed that the workers didn't concentrate very well. The same people would make good quality on one shift and bad on their next shift. The existing solution to this variance in quality was to increase the amount of toner put on the paper. Doing so ensured that the paper would always have enough toner to transfer the writing to the next page. The problem is this added significantly to the cost. About this time, my father met Dr. Deming. He asked him for advice. Dr. Deming had my father create run charts on the system. They tracked various variables over time. The graphics made it easy to see that the pH and temperature of the coating were very stable. However, the viscosity or thickness of the toner supplied to the workers to use at the plant varied widely. The workers would pour each drum of toner into the coater, and if it was too thin or thick, no matter what they did, the carbonless paper they produced would be poor quality, as there would be skips due to a lack of even coating. No amount of beating the workers, bribing the workers, or inspecting their work could resolve the quality problem. Even the worker had no ability to improve quality, as the variance in product quality was built into the system. The quality of the worker's output was controlled by the viscosity of each barrel of coating they poured into the coater. My dad worked with the toner supplier to control viscosity. With viscosity made stable, the company could reduce the amount of toner being applied. The result was a savings of $750,000 in $1980. The workers now all became excellent workers because the variance had been taken out in the toner viscosity. This project was one of Dr. Deming and Bill Conway's early case study examples of the power of applying system thinking to manufacturing. A new leadership mindset. System-driven leadership is a new mindset for leadership. It starts with them, with their broader knowledge, setting the aim for the overall system. Because when there's no clear strategic aim for where the organization is going, where it is innovating, then individual departments create their own vision for optimizing their area of responsibility. Dr. Deming said, "Every system is perfectly designed to get the results it gets." The new mindset focuses the organization on optimizing the outcome of the whole system rather than the properties of the parts. This is the reverse of the classic approach in which the parts of departments, divisions, teams are defined first, and then we derive the whole. I can't say what business was like 100 years ago. Maybe it was so simple a leader could know everything. But I can say that with the speed the world is changing today, there is no chance that a leader can have total knowledge. A retired West Point educated Army officer told me, "Today's technology is changing so fast and is so specialized that there is no way I can understand what my frontline troops can do. As an officer, I need to set the commander's intent, then listen and learn from my troops. If they've been trained properly and have the right resources, They will be far smarter on how to execute than I ever could be. The greatest benefit of the Deming principles is that leaders get to be true leaders. When you have a system that's reliable, that adapts for variation, that is built on cycles of learning and intrinsic motivation, then employees are enabled to be great. The result is joy in work for both the leadership and employees. At the Eureka Ranch, I know we are living the system mindset principles when, after a robust discussion on an issue with the team, I feel confident to say in conclusion, do the right thing. It's a phrase the ranch staff love to hear, as it enables them to use their judgment. Importantly, it's not meant as do the correct thing, but rather the right thing, based on their judgment, their training, and our shared cultural values. After I moved to saying do the right thing, I soon faced a situation in which employees made decisions that turned out badly. This was the key test of my confidence in systems thinking. In each case, I asked, what did you learn? They explained, and value was realized from the failure. Now, to be fair, I can't always say do the right thing. As the leader, I have to have the final say on company values and on some legal and financial issues. However, it's amazing how few times that really is. My feeling is that every time that my team can make a decision, it is a win. Psst. Company, division, or department leaders, imagine a world where decisions are pushed down in the organization, where you or your employees are enabled to do the right thing. Your time is freed up to think on important and meaningful issues. From personal experience, I can tell you that it feels awesome. As I became aware of the power of system thinking, I soon observed that others were living it as well. Bill Belichick, head coach of the New England Patriots football team, the most successful North American sports team over the past 10 years, is a believer in systems thinking. Once the training and game plan is done, he tells the team, do your job. Christopher Price of WEEI radio station explained it this way. Do your job cuts to the heart of Belichick's coaching style. The hint is a simple one. If you execute the game plan that I have laid out for you as a coach, do your job, then the whole team will benefit as a result. In a similar vein, 15-year Army infantry captain Eric Curtis, an innovation engineering blue belt and CFO for Worksite Lighting, is a believer in systems thinking. After briefing his troops on the strategic mission, he enables them by telling them to do great things. As he explained to me, they have the training to do the job. They understand the Army's core values and policies. It's his job to enable them to do great things. Do the right thing, do your job, do great things are mantras that enable employees. They are trusted to do the right things in the right ways, based on the situation and a combination of what they observe on the front line, plus the training, systems, and tools they've received. So what did you learn? What in this chapter surprised you? Reflect on a time when you approached a challenge as a system challenge. Explore challenges you face at this moment in time. Are your challenges due to special cause or common cause errors? Are you unfairly blaming employees when the real issue is the system, training, tools, and methods that they have been provided? Does your formal or informal innovation system enable or control? Is your formal or informal innovation system grounded in intrinsic or extrinsic motivational factors? What do you think are the top three improvements in your innovation system over the past year?